Hello and welcome to the Customer Insight Leader Podcast. Data, analytics, big data science, machine learning, customer insight, behavioral science, blockchain, data ops, data engineering, agile working. Phew, too many terms, too many things to think about. Do you as a leader need somewhere to turn? To hear what other leaders are doing? To hear what really makes a difference in your business? Welcome. The Customer Insight Leader Podcast is here for you. Each episode, we'll be interviewing a different leader in the fields of customer insight, data, and analytics to hear what they really do, what really makes a difference. So settle down, get that cup of coffee, and enjoy the Customer Insight Leader Podcast. Hello and welcome back to Season 2 of the Customer Insight Leader Podcast, a place to hear from today's leaders in the fields of data, customer insight, data science, analytics, and AI. As I shared in the preview episode for this season, a new emphasis for these conversations is that we'll be digging deeper into some of those all-important softer skills. Anyway, I'm your host, Paul Lockton, and with me today is Rob Winters. Rob has been working in data for almost 20 years. Could you get less for murder, don't you? Across both the USA and the Netherlands, working in data leadership roles at businesses including Miro, Naval, Travelbird, and Spill Games. He's also led data programs for over 12 years in multiple companies across several industries. His hands-on data roles have included data analyst, data engineer, and data scientist. So he genuinely has got his hands dirty, listeners. Plus, Rob has very recently made the transition that many data leaders dream about of starting work as an independent consultant. So today, he helps businesses develop a higher proficiency in their data. Certainly a skill I see is much needed in many companies today. Welcome, Rob.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me today.
You're more than welcome. It's good to have you with us. With all my guests, Rob, I like to ask them to give us a bit of their backstory, a bit of their career history, if you like, so we know where they're coming from. So perhaps I can do the same for you in time-honored fashion on this podcast. Please share with us your career story. How did you get into or grow into the work that you do today?
So it was, I'm going to call it unexpected. I actually, I swore to myself there were two things I never wanted to do with my life: sit behind a desk all day and work with computers. So this was not the planned career path I had. I ended up taking a data entry job many years ago. And that kind of triggered me into actually getting interested into the data and the architecture itself, which then led into working as a data analyst at T-Mobile. And then probably about 12 years ago, I moved to the Netherlands to really focus completely on my work as a data professional. And I had this brilliant opportunity to join a company called Spill Games in the Netherlands to build their first data team. And that kind of set the course for me. Since that time, I've had this opportunity to lead data programs in business travel and consumer travel. Most recently, I was leading the data products team at Miro, where I was kind of building the discipline of what is a data product and introducing things like data warehousing. So it's really, it's taken me all over the space. But yeah, and just as you mentioned, as recently as a couple of weeks ago, I made the choice I'm going to strike out on my own in the, you know, the after 40 chapter of my life. So that's been my career path, if you will.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Bobby. Enjoy your after 40s. Look forward to your after 50s. I'm looking forward to my after 60s coming up very soon. The interest in data, can you identify what kind of drew you in? You sort of talk about a data entry job and you got kind of drawn into this data analyst work and then expanding into a number of other functions. What's been your motivation? What made that interesting, given you did start out with this desire not to be chained to the desk programming away?
No, it's the thing I found fascinating and the thing that really pulled me in early on and is still sort of, call it my driving passion, regardless of whether I've been working as an analyst or an engineer or whatever else, or whatever the focus is. What I love about data is it connects the what's happening in the business, the operational aspects, with a highly analytical and quantitative piece. Like, the engineering is interesting, but the ability to sort of express and then optimize business activity based on what you do with the technology, I think is what's really exciting for me. And that kind of was where I initially got triggered, let's call it in 2006. And what today still motivates me is just like being able to sit down with someone, be it in marketing or, you know, I actually got started in customer service or in sales, and and understand that part of the company through the lens of the insights, the measurements, the analytics. And I think that's really where the passion for this comes from.
That makes sense. And I often hear that from the data leaders I've had on this podcast, that it's that, it's almost like why people prefer applied rather than pure mathematics. It's that ability to see how it's going to make a difference, focus on real world problems. And I guess I'm hearing a strain of that commercial interest as well, that you're not just interested in converting a business problem into a data problem. You actually engage with, how do I make this business succeed? What are the commercial realities? What are the issues? Is am I right to pick that up?
Absolutely. I mean, I think if you look at the end of the day, we as a data team, we have this ability to play a partnership role with the different parts of the business. And we can bring that unique skill set to enrich their activities, you know, make them stronger. And that's ultimately, you know, what leads to companies being successful or organizations being successful. And I think that's what's really fun is and exciting is you can directly connect the I'm building insights to marketing is able to better target, or the CSM knows, the customer success manager knows, these are the accounts that need help and here's what we can do with it. And I think that that interplay is what's, like I said, very exciting. It's being able to directly act as a force multiplier to every part of the company.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. Yeah, I see that. Another thing I notice hearing your career story and feels different to the main direction I hear from other data leaders is, frankly, your move to the Netherlands. I hear a lot more people in their data careers who've moved in the other direction. At some point in the UK or in Europe, they've decided they needed to move to the USA to advance their data career and advance their salary in some cases as well. You've gone the other way. Why the move to the Netherlands? And was the culture change an issue? It feels like very different cultures.
I think I've had the same experience of a lot of long-term migrants. I initially left for what was supposed to be 1 to 2 years. It's a bit of a Gilligan's Island sort of experience.
Right.
And the idea was basically to take a bit of a pause. I had a really successful career in the US before, but to take a bit of a pause and reset on, you know, focusing on what I wanted to do and explore a different part of the world. And when I moved to the Netherlands, what I found was I loved the culture here. And I know a lot of people, when they work with Dutch people, they're like, oh, they're direct to the point of abrasive, or it's a very different experience. For me, I found it so refreshing and exciting. You know, there was no question about what someone wanted or what they thought, or if you were doing a good job or not. And it felt very much meritocratic in a way that I didn't experience to the same degree in the United States. And so I've loved my experiences here in the Netherlands because of that culture change. So
right. No, that's good to hear. And I can say, I mean, I've only done a limited amount of work with some Dutch clients, but I can absolutely see that almost once you can shift gears and adapt to it, you can kind of relax into the honesty of it. You can rely on, you're going to get that feedback. Someone's going to tell you if it's not working for them. You don't have to wonder. You don't have to wonder about political games and hidden agendas in the same way, maybe.
It's very low context and, yes, very transparent. And I really feel that leads to the ability to collaborate together more effectively, because you say what you mean and you mean what you say.
Yeah, that makes sense. And in that sense, maybe a very good environment for things like data careers. I'm kind of hearing from the progress in your career that what's also happening around this time was you move not only into data, but you're transitioning into leadership roles. I guess we didn't hear so much about that in your career story. Could you tell us a bit more about how you managed to relatively quickly, really, both gain the data skills that you need technically as these hands-on roles of analyst and engineer and data scientist, and then also the management and leadership skills to transition into leadership? Was that a smooth, quick thing for you? Was that a challenge?
So I think the skills that you require to be a leader, they're completely orthogonal to the skills of your, call it your technical profession, right? Mm-hmm. I was really privileged to start as a small team lead in the United States, let's call it 15 years ago, mm-hmm. and got a lot of great coaching beginning from that point. Mm-hmm. It hasn't always been the smoothest experience. Obviously, this is it's a skill that I feel management is more challenging by far than anything that we do technically. At least let's frame it as to do it well. It's a constantly changing problem space because there's no exactly right answer for any situation. And you know, there's a kind of cliche saying that a team changes every time a person is added or removed. Yeah. But that's true, right? And so I think it's been a challenge to learn. And I think it's been, for me, it's been a journey to discover, you know, and again, I think one of the important things in being a successful manager or, you know, being good at supporting people is adapting to their needs, right? Every person has a different set of needs, a different set of support they require, and a different communication style and everything else, and adapting to those while still remaining your authentic self.
Yes.
And I think finding that balance is quite, that's been a journey for me to learn how to do that.
Yeah, it's a good, really, really good point to make. And I do think the whole authenticity agenda is sometimes oversimplified. As you say, there is this need to have empathy and sensitivity to the needs of those around you. And what your changing team and changing company environment requires of you isn't all about you being yourself and everyone else has to just cope with it. You know, the challenge is greater than that, as you say.
Exactly. It's, I mean, again, look, the way I look at it is my job as a leader is to, number one, make sure everyone knows what we're trying to achieve and why we're trying to achieve it. But number two, to make sure that everyone can succeed to the maximum ability possible in contributing to that goal. And to do that, I really have to be able to adapt myself and my, let's say, ask to that individual.
Mm. Yes. Yes. Agreed. Okay. Well, we've explored some of your career background and the technical foundation you clearly had with the hands-on work that you did and I imagine sometimes do now as well in your current role. The theme of this season is all about softer skills. So I'd be remiss if I didn't take this turn, if you like, in our conversation. So let me ask you, like I'm asking all the guests this season, which softer skill or people skill would you identify that you found essential to your growth as a data leader?
I had the privilege of managing a young woman in my team over the course of a number of years, and she was a life coach as well as working as an analyst. And I think everything that I learned from her about discovering what people need, what people want, who they are, fears, strengths, for me that was probably the most, I don't want to say the most because it's not the only thing that was really important, but one of the most impactful and important sort of educations I had in building my skill set was how do I essentially learn to effectively discover, and you have to do this quickly, and again, you have to do it authentically, but discover and empathize and connect with every person's individual journey they're on. And I think that was a big piece of becoming effective, successful. And I think that's looking at how do I manage the team. And then the second piece of being successful as a leader, I think, is building your negotiation skill set, right? I mean, we exist in a scarcity driven environment. You never have the resource. If you're doing your job well, you never have the time and resources to do everything that you know is going to be asked of you. And really, if you do it really well, the frequency you have to say no versus yes goes up and up and up. People are going to demand more and more and more of you than you can actually deliver against. And I think learning how to negotiate to help people get what they need, not what they want, as well as being able to say no in a way where people understand and accept, I think that's very important. And that's a skill that a lot of leaders need to learn.
Well called out, actually. We've had a previous guest on this season who talked more about developing empathy and an understanding of others. And I think you've got a useful spin on that with the kind of individual tailoring challenge that it is so different for everybody. But I'm interested by this focus on negotiation. I think it's a good one, and it's not a skill that we've zeroed in on so much. What do you think makes negotiation a particular challenge for data leaders? Is it more required of data leaders than just anyone leadership wise, or do you think it's just a general leadership skill that data leaders need as well?
I think there's a particular demand in data that you might not get in, say, software engineering, because typically in software engineering, you know, just simplifying it a bit, you're going to line up one team against one PM and you're going to work on one sort of area of focus. Right. Now, in data, there's kind of two factors that come into play on where negotiation is really important. I think the first one is in data, historically, a lot of data teams have operated more like a service desk. You know, you ask for a dashboard, I make a dashboard. You ask for a data set. And I don't, coming back to what I think is valuable in data organizations is where they play the partner role, right? They say, look, you're trying to maximize ROAS. So let's figure out what we can do to enable you to maximize ROAS. Or you're trying to minimize churn, you're a B2B company, you're trying to minimize churn. Let me understand your CSM activity base, and let me think about what we can do to enable you to do that. So that's where that negotiation skill has to come in, is you're trying to effectively adjust the relationship model between data and between the partners you work with. You know, I think the other angle of it is, you know, going back to the engineering paradigm, in data, I'm typically not just working with one PM or one department. I'm working with literally every part of the company, right? I'm trying to balance resourcing between engineering and sales and marketing and CXOs and everything else. Everyone has their priority one. The data team is in a lot of places where those all come together and have to then be negotiated down. Again, going back to scarcity to think about, okay, what can we achieve? And that's where you have to become very strong at, number one, negotiating what's just not going to happen at all. And number two, negotiating on how you redefine the ask so that you can give them something, right? You can enable them with 80% of what they're looking for, so you can keep them moving forward as a partner while you service all the other asks that are coming to your team.
Yes, a good point, a good context to have set, Bob. I recognize that. I think in the UK, we probably talk a little bit more about ROI, return on investment, but the prioritization challenge, I completely agree. I think almost every data leader I've worked with, one of the things that they need to develop, as well as, I would say, general mental toughness, is an ability to prioritize in a way that they can use that to calmly push back on in their negotiation demand from different business areas, and balance that stakeholder relationship with key stakeholders with, in many ways, a bigger commercial view, seeing more of the big picture than individual other commercial leaders, to go, that activity just isn't as valuable a use of our resources here as doing this other piece. Look at the return, look at the alignment with the strategy, all those kind of things. Is that the kind of complexity of thinking and prioritization that you also have in mind when you talk about a negotiation skill in a data leader?
I think that's a big part of it, Paul. I think there's another angle to it, which data teams are often exposed to, which is you're not just prioritizing, you mentioned key stakeholders. It's not just about key stakeholders. It's about, you know, a data program is holistic. It should be enabling everyone from your account executive up to your CEO, right? And it's being able to build awareness and being able to negotiate back, even with, let's say, your chief revenue officer, to say, look, I appreciate the need here, but 30% of your account executives have approached us with this problem in the last 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. How mm-hmm. do we need to focus on not just a key stakeholder, but let's call it a pool of stakeholders who in total represent a very big business opportunity. And I think that also adds some complexity to it. If you're building a data program, which does not just serve the executive team, but it serves every person who can benefit from using data in your company.
Yeah, it's a good, really good point to have made. I guess I'm sort of hearing in that elements of data literacy education and that challenge for data leaders these days to help businesses understand the art of the possible and understand the implications of what they ask for. And this kind of bigger picture, I talked about bigger picture commercial, you kind of talk about bigger picture empathy, that you see the implications and the opportunities at different levels and cross-functionally across the organization. That really is quite a challenge.
It definitely is. I would argue it's more than any one person can put into their head or their heart completely. But that's where, you know, if you build your data team around a culture that, you know, enables everyone to negotiate and enables everyone to make these decisions and encourages everyone to bring these observations to the broader group, I think you start creating a data team which can operate holistically to support this sort of holistic business need for insight.
Good point. I like your heads and hearts element. I think that's absolutely true. So I guess I'm hearing empowerment of the team as well as negotiation skills in the leader. This is about a team, leader included, who have skill, have clarity of where they can add value and have skills in this negotiation.
For sure. I mean, I look at it as, you know, the leader, the manager, what have you, they're just a player in a team, right? Mm-hmm. And the team, a really strong team, will be built out of a lot of people who are leaders. Ideally everyone, but I realize that's not entirely possible at all times. But really creating a team where everyone feels that agency, that empowerment, and has the skills to operate against it effectively, I think that is really, really important to constructing a really strong data team.
Yeah, agreed. And not also so often emphasized. And I like that leadership as a verb thinking as well. It's good. The other thing I tend to like to ask guests as we explore these kind of softer skills, because I want to help listeners engage with how they might go on that development journey, is about role models. Many times people, when they've really focused on a particular skill, they've gained the motivation to put the work in to get better at it, if you like. It's because they've seen someone do it really well. They've had that inspiration, that human example. Is that true for you with this? Have you had a role model who inspired you with the power of such negotiation and empowerment?
Oh, for sure. I feel incredibly fortunate in my career that it's not this one manager, but it's a whole series of managers who basically gave me enormous space to succeed or fail, but fail safely, and provided me with the opportunity and the coaching to do so. I look back at, you know, I've had managers who basically told me, well, you're clearly passionate about this, block time and just go explore it. I had one manager who one time, she told me that I would grow more in another position. So she proactively submitted my CV to that other position in the company.
Oh, wow.
And she was like, this is going to hurt me, but it's going to help you a lot more. I've had managers who basically said, just tell me what you want to do. Tell me how you think about doing it. And then I'll push it through with the executive team. And I think just having these managers who make you feel encouraged and supported and are looking out for not just their immediate needs in a job, but looking out for you as a person. I think that's really shown me what I should strive to be.
Okay. That's good. And can you identify how you got better yourself at these?
So I can give you the really trite answers, obviously. I
read a lot of books. And then we'll dig in.
I read a lot of books. I obviously get feedback and coaching and et cetera. But look, I would argue your successes are a big piece of learning, but your failures are even more valuable. And I've made mistakes. I continue to make mistakes. I think everyone does in
absolutely
misreading situations or not adapting sufficiently or whatever it might be. And then taking the time to reflect on whether I'm, I don't want to say successful, but I am who I want to be, how I want to be, and I'm having the effect on the people I work with that I would strive for. And if not, why am I failing? I find that continuous reflection really, really critical for evaluating. I think it helps me understand, number one, how can I do a better job as a leader and as a manager? But number two, how can I be a better person? Again, maybe that it does sound trite as well, but I think that's probably one of the single biggest learning tools I have is just self-reflection. You know, I maintain a journal. I write down what's going on every single day. Yeah. I look at where I'm struggling and what went right and wrong during the day. And I find that has helped me enormously to evaluate myself.
Great. No, I've got a number of mentoring clients actually who they swear by journals as well. They really work for them. I certainly think a method of daily reflection can be really, really powerful. It often strikes me that it's almost like a personal version of the power of retrospectives when doing agile working, something that too many businesses neglect, I find, when I go and look at the reality of their agile working. Is this time to pause and go, okay, what did we learn from this? It's not a beat myself up time. But what's my lessons learned? What would I not want to do again? What would I want to lean into more? Where do I need to change tack? Because that didn't work.
And I think it also, another place where it's very valuable is, again, so if you're doing this job, so you're sometimes going to make choices which are controversial, where you're going to disagree and have to push back on something. It allows you to explore the why behind those and your thought process and the choices you're making. And it can be a reflection, can be a point of strength as you make these more strong choices. And I think that's also very valuable, especially for newer leaders who are learning to do this, learning to engage in these behaviors, right? Having that sort of reflection, maybe, so, you know, I did make the right choice there. And there were consequences to it, which might have been unpleasant, but it was what I needed to do. I think it's also very valuable for reaffirming yourself.
Yes, you're right. Particularly if that takes a bit of courage in the face of some heat or some anger even back at you. Yeah, that's a good point. Out of this reflection and the journaling, Rob, I wonder, is there a positive example that really stays with you? Is there something where you go, actually reflecting has helped me see why that was absolutely the right thing to do. I need to do that more. That is the right approach in the context of negotiating and empowering. Is there something where you've learned this is the right thing to do?
Yeah. So I can actually think of a gentleman I worked with, and just looking, I was using the time to think about our interactions. He was an individual contributor on my team, and looking at his behaviors and where I was seeing him joyous at work, let's say, and chewing on it a bit. And I was looking at it, and what I realized was he told me again and again, he loved his engineering. He was really focused on it and everything else. But what I was seeing from him was what he was getting his most joy from was the coaching, the mentoring, the strategizing and leading and everything. And actually, so based on that, I started really encouraging him. I'm like, you should look into management. You'd be this incredible leader. Da, da, da. He was opposed to it at first. And, you know, I kept watching this and I just saw this theme kept emerging. And I kind of slowly won him over to this idea over a bit of time. You know, his view was managers are people who just frankly bullshit each other a lot and they don't contribute a lot. But what we were able to use basically by just reflecting on him was, well, a good manager makes everyone else stronger, right? And actually now he's been an EM for the last few years, that's a path he never would have put himself on. And he's loving it. He's so happy with what he's doing. But it was by using this time of just really reflective thinking about the people that I was observing every day that I was able to see this and help him take this step.
Great. That is really good. Funnily enough, it reminds me of past experience of, I can think of a couple of people who've worked for me where one which worked and one which didn't, funnily enough. I could see how good they were at elements of a more upfront commercial role or managerial role, but there was an internal mindset in themselves. I'm a technical person. I love the coding. I love the modeling work. And that's what I want to do. I think I'd hate management. I think I'd hate being more of the kind of consultant or relationship manager type role. I think you're right. There is almost a moral responsibility on managers and leaders to persist sometimes. Just because someone says, oh, no, I don't want to do that, it's not necessarily true that that should be the end of it. It's worth with people playing back to them what you see.
I think it's reframing their understanding sometimes of problems. I tell my teams, or I've told my teams in the past, kind of, you know, my job is to make sure you're not working your job in a few years, 2 years. You might be doing a different job in this team. You might be working in a different company or a different role, but my job is to make sure that you grow through this process and you are able to take whatever that next step is for yourself. And I'm supposed to make sure that you have the opportunities, you have the support and education to do that. And I think the other part of it is seeing what potential people have and continuously trying to just find how people can grow, right? Yeah. Like watching for those things that they might not see in themselves. That mirror of opportunity that they actually do have.
Yeah, really good point for you to have raised. Okay, well, one of the things I like to do on these episodes, Rob, is to protect some time to, if you like, talk to the portion of our listeners who are a bit earlier in their career. They've either just started out or they're fairly early in their data careers. And I know that some of those people do listen to this podcast to get tips from old hands who are far down the road, seen as very, very senior and exalted from their perspective. So given that we've all learned by doing and, as you mentioned, failing as well, considering what you have learned, what skill would you now recommend to people who are back at that stage? What do you think they should focus on developing that they're maybe not hearing in all the mass pressure they're getting to learn this and pick up that?
Well, I'm going to start with what you shouldn't focus on, which is, and it's funny to say this in a very technology-oriented sort of job, but it's the technology. You know, the tech itself will come and go. I mean, you've seen the rise and fall of so many technologies just in the last 15 years. Yeah. Some patterns are persistent, right? And learning those more universal technical patterns are helpful, but focusing on getting certified in Rust, let's say, or what have you, that's not going to make you a better leader, right? I would argue that if you're early in the journey, and we've talked a bit about building your authentic voice, we've talked about building adaptability, we've talked about negotiation. I think these are all really important. I think building your ability to have a vision and build a strategy and relate what your team does to the broader organization. And being able to understand that, you know, strategy is about choices you make. It's around what you choose not to do and where you choose to narrowly focus and why you choose it. I think that's a really valuable skill. I think it's incredibly important that as early as possible, and I don't even think it's just leaders. I think anyone in a more senior position, be it a senior engineer or what have you, they need to build the capability to understand organizational strategy and build a sort of a local strategy to support that. And I think that's, you know, I think that's the one area where, call it traditional MBA education or what have you, but digging in on some of these topics is very valuable for you, because then that also feeds your ability to lead your team, to be able to, you know, whether it's build a storyline that they're going to be part of and take them on a journey, or to be able to understand how every person will contribute to the company. Well, you need that intermediary layer of data team strategy or analytics team strategy or whatever else to do that.
Yes. Agreed. A good tip. I've not had that come through from someone else. And I'm aware that coupled with a number of the other themes you've raised, gives this kind of theme to our conversation of a lot of it's about joining the dots. It's about being able to see how things connect in order to prioritize or negotiate, being able to see the impact that you can have, having that vision of the team, being able to see where there might be opportunities for people in your team. It's getting out of siloed, myopic kind of thinking to this bigger picture, joining the dots. Would you see that theme come through as well?
Oh, absolutely. I think as a leader, I would actually take it a step further, Paul, and I'd say it's not just about being able to connect the dots, but being able to see the dots that aren't even there yet and being able to say, look, this is where we will draw towards.
Tell me more. Tell me, do you just mean in terms of envisioning the potential of data, or is it more than that?
I think it's more than that. I think if you look, there are a lot of organizations I've spoken to, a lot of people and data I speak to, where there's a, let's call it a loose statement of where they want to get to. We want to be a data-driven organization, right? I can't tell you how many times I've heard some variant on that, or we want AI ML in our product. But you know, I think everyone who works in data, they've heard one of these two statements at least 50 times. That is a meaningless statement. Both of those are meaningless, just quite frankly. What a data-driven organization is will vary for every company and for every team and every company. And you need to be able to envision what that might look like in the organization that you're working with. And it's not just running a run book or following a few blog posts. It's thinking about, what's the change you need to affect in the people? How do you build allies in this journey? How do you build a vision? You know, and I think that's where I'm talking about dots that don't even exist is going from empty statements or no statements at all and being able to say, okay, this is how I envision this company looking in 3 years, knowing what's needed, knowing what impact I might have. Here's how it might work and how I might, with my team, facilitate getting from not just A to B, but A to Z, and all the steps along the way. And how will I adapt that journey as I build more understanding?
Great. Really nice, clear vision to end the conversation on, actually, Rob. Thank you for that. Thank you for your thoughts. Many thanks for your time today. As I thought it would be, it's been really engaging to chat with you and pick your brains on this topic. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Paul. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
And thank you, listeners, also for listening. I hope you found that helpful and continue to listen to the Customer Insight Leader podcast. More great interviews coming up. There's also regular content on our blog at customerinsightleader.com. So you might want to check that out too. Before then, it just remains for me to again say thank you to everyone for your time, including Rob. Have a great week, and perhaps you can reflect on some of that conversation that Rob and I were having. What does it mean for you to join the dots? What does it mean for you to spot the dots that aren't even there yet and begin to envision and negotiate? And I was really keen as a mentor on Rob's theme about self-reflection as well. Whether it's journaling, how can you take the time out to hone your approach and learn from what you do? Plenty to mull on there. Bye for now, listeners.